Still Queer as Folk.
You're listening to the Still Queer as Folk podcast, where each week we take down an episode of Showtime's Queer as Folk TV show and find out if it still holds up 15 years later. I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Thank you so much for listening, and please give us a 5-star rating, a review, a social media like to help us out.
You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter at StillQueerAF and on Facebook at StillQueerAsFolk. We also have a website where you can leave us a message to play on the air, and that's at StillQueerAsFolk.com/hello.
This episode is called Recapping Season 3. This is a special episode. We'll also take a look ahead at Season 4, talk about the Bravo reboot of the show, and later on in the episode, I'm going to challenge Matt to Queer as Folk trivia.
God.
I fully intend to destroy you with these questions.
Listeners, I have no idea what he's going to ask. This is not going to go well.
I can't wait. Recapping Season 3, the biggest thing that I want to point out is we no longer have to listen to...
Good riddance. Bye. Never see you again. Walk out that door. I'm very happy about this. Ever since we started this podcast, I have talked to you both on and off air about how much I hate that intro. I think it is ridiculous.
Yeah, we've talked about it a little bit over the season. The graphics are pretty meaningless. This wall of sound song that means nothing.
With these sort of like late 90s graphics and naked bodies and just meaningless men that have nothing to do with the story, are just dancing. And then it just says Queer as Folk and the episode starts.
I think the first time around, I called it the Laverne and Shirley intro. The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Schlemiel, Schlemazel.
Shout out to Penny Marshall, who recently passed
away. Yes, oh, that was so sad. Yes. I love the movie Big.
Oh, I love A League of Their Own.
Oh yeah, that was good too. Oh, Madonna. Fabulous.
Yes.
Yeah. So I hated that song then, back in 2002-ish, 3-ish, when the show was airing, and I hate it now.
Agreed. I've hated it since I watched the series the first time back in college.
So. There was a producer at one of the networks that carries our podcast sent me a link to the intro on YouTube, and the guy that did the graphics for it was in the comments asking if anyone had a high-quality copy of it that he could use on his reel. I was like, oh, honey, just don't do it.
But can we also talk about how as a professional, he didn't already do that?
Yeah, that was kind of the funny part is, dude, you made this. Didn't you keep it? Don't you have a copy?
Apparently not. He didn't hit save.
Yeah. So this coming season, we get to hear something a little better. This is going to be the intro for seasons 4 and 5. And this is kind of what I would call a Gap commercial intercut with PG rated porn.
It's a little Degrassi to me.
Yeah.
Which I think that's why I really enjoy it.
Whatever it takes, you know, I can exactly. Make it through.
Well, and something that I really love about this new intro is that we see the characters.
Good point.
We just kept seeing these.
Blah.
We just kept seeing these Grindr profiles just go across the screen because all we saw were their chests and their abs.
Not that we have any problem with Grindr or chests and abs, but...
None, but...
This is a TV show.
Yes, this is a TV drama that wants to take itself seriously. And I enjoy the fact that they're like, okay, we're going to be around at least for another season or two. So we're going to put the characters you know and love at the forefront. Thank you.
I just thought that it had a bit of a 30-something vibe to it.
It is that classic intro where, you know, the characters they're dancing, they're hugging each other, they're being silly.
It's a Gap ad.
But then we're also treated to, I feel, some foreshadowing with what goes on in season 4 in terms of the political activism that occurs.
That's true. We see a biracial couple wearing complimentary positive and negative shirts.
We see signs, you know, protest signs. We see people wearing T-shirts to say like,
I love my gay son on Debbie.
Well, Debbie has always worn that. But, you know, those are now the nondescript characters we get in addition to like the leather daddy.
Mm.
you know, I think there's another cowboy. At one point, there's a little threesome thing happening.
Why wasn't there a twink in there someplace?
I mean, Justin shows up.
Oh, that's true. There was a one of those unknown people.
He's the resident twink.
An unknown person was holding up the a silence equals death symbol while wearing a nobody knows I'm a lesbian t-shirt.
Yes. So again, we're seeing how this show is going to take on a, I think for you, you describe it as preachy, but it is taking its moment to say, we are now going to be a show that's bigger than Gay Anonymous Hot Sex.
I like this intro far, far better, but just like the protesters and the signs, and like there's another shirt that said, God made me gay. Like, well, yes, and, we know.
Well, and we also see Gus in
we
the
do.
Intro.
We do see Gus.
So we see the idea of a modern family.
Familial bliss. Debbie kissed Michael and then she also slapped him. The same
which
intro.
I think that is totally par for the course. There's also that moment where Brian and Michael like share cigarette smoke.
Oh yeah.
Which I sometimes forget that I guess Michael is a smoker or
Brian is.
Or Brian is a smoker. And I guess Michael partakes every once in a while.
The interesting thing is in certain regions that our podcast is distributed to, showing pictures and graphics of smoking is actually illegal.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's interesting in this intro here. Back to Debbie kissing Michael. I saw a video someplace that was a compilation of every time in the entire series that Debbie physically whacked Michael in the face because she's known for slapping him. And this was just a compilation of whack, 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 whack.
There is a video of this?
Yeah, it's a compilation. All the times that Michael Novotny was slapped by his mother.
Do not worry, fans. That will be shared on our social media later.
We'll find it.
We'll share with you.
I did like the final cut on that intro where Brian turns around. He's the only one on screen and walks away. But the motion of the logo was sort of like flushing him out of the frame.
And is he in like carpenter jeans? Like what is going on there?
I think that was like the Justin Timberlake era of like bigger jeans. That was right at the forefront of skinny jeans coming around. And unfortunately, those jeans are making a comeback.
No, they are not.
I agree. I don't want to see that. I'm tired enough of twinks wearing mom jeans and stuff like that. It's like, come on.
I'm going to New York this weekend. It's all I'm going to see. They're very big in Brooklyn.
So season 4 was pitched as the original comes of age. And what? It's immediately pegged as a big turning point in the show, though, as we see in the opening.
Yes, exactly. I like that they're trying to have a rebranding of sorts to show that they want to continue on.
I wasn't especially thrilled about the original coming of age. So no, I like season 1 best.
You liked the before they were 30 and they didn't have a care in the world.
They're partying all the time. A couple of weeks ago, I was on a flight and I had ripped the DVD of the episode. I think it was 14 that we were going to be reviewing. And I ripped it wrong and it came out with the Spanish voices, the Spanish overdubs on it instead of the English ones. And it was interesting because the voices weren't at all what I would expect from these characters. And maybe it's because I know them so well that seeing other voices come out of their mouth just seemed really funny.
That's why I don't like dubbing in general.
Yeah, me either. It was weird. I've got a clip here of Debbie, Justin, Vic, Ben, and Michael all together. Let's listen to that.
Okay.
No olvides votar.
Bien, that's chicos. Debbie.
No olviden votar.
She's very sassy.
No olvides. Se supone que estés afuera repartiéndolo.
Sounds like my cousin.
Le encontré un uso mejor.
That's Justin.
¿Por qué carajo estás tan pesimista?
Realista.
Es cierto.
That's Uncle Vic.
No esperes nada de este grupo de idiotas apáticos.
Les diré que esto no se acaba hasta que esta un poco gorda señora diga que se acabó. ¿Ya? No olvides votar. No olviden votar, chicos.
Lo que quieras.
Tomen esto.
So she's going to go talk to Ben and Michael.
¿Qué pasa? ¿Quieren que ponga un cartel que diga que esto es un suicidio colectivo?
I think the Vic sounds very similar. There's sort of a lower gravelly sound to him.
That's Ben. And that was Michael closing it out. That was the scene where Rita Montgomery had shown up and all in the bar. And Justin was talking about, he was just being realistic about not voting. So I just thought that Debbie sounded like so sassy. She had like this to her that it wasn't what I thought it should be. And so I watched the entire episode in Spanish and I don't speak Spanish. I can order lunch in Spanish, but that's it. I didn't have subtitles on it either. So it was really interesting to watch it. And Ted and Emmett had interesting voices too, but I think Brian was probably the closest voice of what I would expect. And so I mixed these two together. So we'll start out with his Spanish voice and then fade right into his English voice.
Okay.
Un imbécil me dijo que debes estar disponible
enough. You have to be willing to sacrifice everything.
Ooh, it's sort of breathy.
It was a good match.
Yes, okay.
Let's hear it again.
Un imbécil me dijo que debes estar disponible
enough. You have to be willing to sacrifice everything.
Brian sounds perfect.
Shocking. You love the Brian.
Now. Let's talk about our favorite parts of season 3. What was your favorite?
My favorite story of season 3 would be the Stockwell storyline.
Ah, interesting.
And what I loved about it is that I think it's the first time this series really committed to telling a story the entire season. I felt like this was the first time that we were able to really truly get invested in the stakes of what's going to happen. To the last episode, I didn't know if Stockwell was going to win or not.
Yeah.
So I think that speaks highly of how the season was able to carry that storyline through its peaks and valleys and maintain it. Like, I feel like they cut out storylines so quickly and wrapped them up in a very nice, neat bow.
As that season was progressing, did you have a hunch that he was going to win or lose?
I was leaning that he was going to win, and then we would have to deal with season 4, and that's what feeds Justin's political activism, that now they have a real enemy that they have to fight against every step of the way.
Yeah, that's a good point. It seems like there would have been a lot more for the writers to go with if he did win.
It showed how timely that storyline is for today, yeah, given what we are now. And I could only, and maybe that was the cynic in me thinking, well, of course he's going to win, even after all the reasons to show why this guy is absolutely not the person who should be leading Pittsburgh as mayor. He's still going to win, and then everyone's going to go back in the closet. Like, that's how terrible it's going to be. And so that's why I think I was so moved in the last episode when we talk about how it went into the black and white, and then as soon as they put the rainbow flag back up on Liberty Avenue, the color came back in the celebration because he lost. Like, so I was steeling myself for Stockwell to win.
I guess I took a much easier favorite story. You had like a nice political story and uplifting, drew it into modernity. My favorite was Ethan.
Oh.
Though I feel like they wrapped it up way too quickly and neatly.
Absolutely.
I liked that Ethan was such a different character for this show. I guess he was mostly straight acting, sort of.
I wouldn't say he was straight acting, but
he was most definitely gay. But wasn't part of the scene. He didn't go to Babylon.
Yes.
He didn't go to the gay clubs like the Gravel Pit or bathhouses. He was into romance and love, and he was just definitely cast as the exact opposite of Brian. That might be why the character was really appealing to me. I was kind of getting bored with Brian, and I was happy to see Justin getting real love from somebody.
And this is what I was talking about as we were going through the Ethan storyline, is that because he is offering everything Justin wants now, and that I thought, like you said, Brian was getting stale. Mm-hmm. Like, we knew exactly where it was going. It came down even to the sex that Justin and Brian were having, where it felt mechanical. There was no passion.
Insert penis. Remove penis. Repeat.
Yeah, that was it.
Lather. And rinse. Repeat.
And here we get Ethan romancing him, and there was passion and fire and violin music. Yes, it was
aggressive
wonderful.
Violin playing.
And wine and cheese.
I went back and watched a few of those episodes preparing for this one. And I was like, oh, man. It's like the storyline really could have gone a lot further. But boom, Ethan's gone. Never mentioned again.
Like, can you imagine if the Ethan storyline had continued to mold in with the Stockwell storyline?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine the clash that Brian is representing the enemy, and that can only bring Justin and Ethan closer together, but like, that's what feeds the activism or there is something that could have totally happened there.
So what was your least favorite story?
Now, this isn't because I think they did things wrong with the character or anything, or it speaks to the actor's ability, but it's Ted's descent into his drug addiction.
That was your least favorite?
It's my, well, and let me qualify why it's my least favorite. It's because I love Ted as a character, and it was just so hard to watch that. I appreciate why they did it, and I think Scott Lowell did an incredible job showing that. It was just so hard to watch, to see his downfall, especially because, you know, I feel like it's such an easy character to knock down when he was up, you know, to then say, oh, great, he made this porn empire and he's successful and he's happy and he's doing what he loves. Let's take that all away. But not only that, let's also then make him drug addicted and cheating on the love of his life. And just like, let's
what else can we do to him?
Yes, we had him at one extreme. Now let's throw him to the other.
That's kind of the Degrassi Absolutely. Approach too,
yes,
where you take these nice kids and we watch them grow up where they start in like grade 8 or 9 until the time that they're seniors and have been pregnant, had an abortion,
died,
were drug addicted. Yeah, died, got stabbed. For me, my least favorite story was Melanie's on-again, off-again pregnancy. Yes. I felt like it just got in the way of everything else. Some episodes, it was as if the writers had kind of forgotten that she was knocked up.
Absolutely.
And at other moments, she was in the hospital immobilized by it. And I think the writing team should have paid more attention to this storyline and had it at least as a runner in every single episode.
Yeah, there was no continuity to the struggle of this pregnancy. At one point, Melanie and Lindsay had never discussed the fact that Mel was supposed to like not have children or that there was a miscarriage that had happened in her family. And I'm like, you've been partners for years and You've already had one child, so that was never part of the discussion. I'm like, please understand that while I am excited to have a family, this is my history, and this is something we may have to deal with. Like,
right.
None of it was discussed. But then at one point, she's told that she's working too hard. I'm like, she's like 6 weeks pregnant. She can still practice law.
This story did take some of the B plots and episodes, but once again, it was just a short shrift to the lesbian stories. And Melanie and Lindsay and Gus could have been an entire TV show on its own with Brian as like a supporting character.
Yes. It's like Queer as Folk is the Golden Girls and the Mel, Lindsay, Gus storyline is Empty Nest.
Seasons 4 and 5 balance it out much better though, but I still feel like that story was just very disjointed across the entire series. So not at all my favorite.
Still Queer as Folk.
Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We like those 5 stars.
It's still Queer as Folk. There's more on the way. It is time for Queer as Folk, the trivia game.
Okay,
I put together a trivia game for Matt. I wrote up 25 questions covering seasons 1, 2, and 3. And listeners, Matt is hearing this for the first time. He didn't participate in any of the pre-production of this segment. He's hearing the questions at the same time you are.
Oh, no. Is it anything like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Do I get a phone a friend?
No phone a friend. Oh. But instead of bells and buzzers for right and wrong answers, I came up with 3 samples from the show that we're going to use instead. So if you get the right answer, you're going to hear this.
Now you know what rimming is.
Okay.
If you get the answer wrong, you will hear,
you fucked up big time.
And I anticipate you having some partial answers where it's like half right, half wrong. So if that's the case, you're going to hear,
great.
That was regular Roy, the judge. If you want to play along at home, get a pencil out. And when you're done, post your score on our Facebook page in this episode's thread.
And be honest.
Yes. So Matt, grab your pen and you keep score as we're going. And you ready?
Okay.
Here's 25 questions. I'm trying to decide which finger to put my button on. Or which button to put my finger on first here. Trying to anticipate which one you'll get right off the bat. So, what are the first names of Brian's parents?
Jack. And I only know his mother is Drunk Lady.
Half credit.
Yes.
What's the name of Brian's nephew that accused him of molesting him?
Ooh. Ah, he's just a prick. I don't know.
You fucked up big time.
What is Ethan Gold's cat's name?
He had a cat?
Yeah, he did.
Of all the questions, I have no idea.
Fucked up big time.
I'm not even giving the right answers here. I should do that. Ethan's cat's name is Wolfram von Eschenbach. He's a German poet.
Oh.
He's introduced the first time that Justin shows up at his house. Brian's nephew is named John, and his mother's name is Joni. So,
all J names. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Which room in Melanie and Lindsay's house did Lita renovate?
Oh, the attic.
Now you know what rimming is.
What is Daphne's last name?
I don't know.
Fucked up big time.
Her last name is Chanders. What is Emmett's porn star name?
Oh, I do know this. Mm-hmm. Oh God, I'm running out of time.
You fucked up big time.
Fetch Dixon.
God damn it.
Who won the Cops versus Queers bowling tournament?
The cops did.
Now you know what rimming is.
How much money total did Brian give to Ethan?
Ooh, $1,000?
You fucked up big time.
$100.
Oh, I was being really generous. Okay.
Which nipple does Justin have pierced?
Oh, it was...
You have a 50-50 chance here.
I'm going to say the left.
You fucked up big time.
That's the right. What is Dr. David Cameron's ex's name?
I thought we were only doing season 3 questions.
No, I said 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, damn. His ex?
Dr. David Cameron's ex's name.
Oh, I don't remember his wife.
It's Mac.
You fucked up big time.
Mac?
Yep. What is Professor Ben Bruckner's ex's name who died from AIDS complications?
Ooh, I don't remember that.
You fucked up big time.
I paid so much attention to these episodes.
It's Paul.
Oh.
Are you still keeping score?
Yes.
Okay. Are you writing down like yes or no before you even answer? It's like, nope, don't know this one. Nope, don't know this one. Okay. What's the name of Emmett's cyber boyfriend in season 1?
Oh, I was all ready for George Schickel. I'm not going to get this.
You fucked up big time.
Use my hole 27.
Oh.
Who did Melanie have an affair with in season 1?
Oh, shit.
You fucked up big time.
Her name was Marianne.
These are awful.
Who did Emmett cheat on Ted with in season 2?
Dijon, like
now
the mustard.
Now you know what rimming
there
is.
There it is. What two schools did Justin get accepted to for university?
He got accepted to, I want to say Princeton and the art school.
The art school?
The Pittsburgh School of the Arts. I don't know. Okay, I'll take it. I'll take it.
It was Dartmouth.
Oh, Dartmouth.
And Pittsburgh Institute of Fine Arts.
Well, I knew it was an Ivy League.
What is the name of Justin and Daphne's high school?
The Crisp Hobbs Hand Job School.
You fucked up big time.
St. James Academy. You got to know this next one.
Oh, God.
What's the name of the gay TV show in the show that the gang watches?
Gay's Blazes.
Now you know what rimming is.
There it is. What's the name of Dr. David Cameron's son?
Oh, my God. J.T. York. That's a sort of right answer. Thank you.
Hank.
Hank, yes.
Played by Ryan Cooley.
Who was J.T. York on Degrassi? Thank you.
What did Justin run away to, or where did Justin run away to in season 1 to be a go-go boy?
New York.
More specific.
New York City.
He says, I'm going to go to and be a go-go boy and take money from gross old men. Okay, I'll give you half credit.
Okay.
It was Chelsea.
Oh, you mean specific. Okay.
What silverware style did Melanie and Lindsay choose?
Oh, they chose the queen.
Close.
Queen.
More?
Elizabeth.
You fucked up big time.
It was a queen. I'm going to give myself sword.
It was an empress. Oh, Empress Alexander.
It. Oh, damn. Okay.
What is the name of Ted's dungeon master?
I'm so angry with myself because I should know this because he makes him a suck pig.
You fucked up big time.
Dale Wexler.
Ugh. As soon as you say it, I'm like, duh, of course it is.
What is Brian's sister's name?
Oh, bitch.
Oh.
That's partial credit.
You fucked up big time.
Claire.
Partial credit.
What is Michael's dad's real name? Michael's dad's real name.
Davina DeVore.
The real name is Danny DeVore. So
Davina DeVore.
You were close. You get half credit. Which two characters share the same car license plate number?
I'm trying to think of who has cars in this. That's, I mean, Brian has a car.
Brian does have a car.
Jennifer Taylor has a car.
Jennifer Taylor has a car.
At one point, Michael has a car.
Michael had a car?
Yes. Remember, Dr. David Cameron got him a car. Okay.
Brian and Dr. David had the same license plate number.
Okay.
Who is the bottom that is getting pounded in the premiere episode of each season?
Todd.
Now you know what rimming is.
And here's a bonus question that there's no way that you're going to get.
Oh, okay.
What movie features the actors that played Justin's parents and George Schickel?
Justin's parents and George Schickel?
So Justin's parents were played by Sherry Miller mm-hmm. and John Fury. And George Schickel was played by Bruce Gray. All three of them were in a movie together.
You fucked up big time.
The only thing I could think of with Bruce was My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
It was called A Killing Spring from 2002.
Oof. Was that a Canadian film?
Yeah, I don't know.
I bet it was a Canadian film.
So that was 26 questions with Matt. How did you score?
Hold on, let me see.
Judges are tallying. Oh, boy.
Let me add this up real quick. I think I did 9 correct.
Okay.
11 wrong and
you
6
fucked
partial.
Up big time.
So I definitely got more wrong than right or partial, but I think I did a lot better than I expected. Because I knew who they were. I can picture them. Like Dale Wexler. Mm-hmm. I can totally picture that.
So if you played along with us and you kept score, post your score in this episode's thread on Facebook and see if you beat Matt.
Still queer as folk.
Let's talk about season 4 coming up.
Yes.
So Showtime hyped this one as the original comes of age. It was really pegged as we're not doing this youthful shit anymore. We are no longer in our 20s. We are in our 30s. We have families. We have political views. We're going to scale back on the drug use. We're going to send people into rehab, get them cleaned up. So I got to thinking that I kind of miss these season 1 and 2 moments, like Justin in the locker room at high school jacking off guys, or Brian and Michael snorting drugs in the stalls at Babylon, all these random hookups. And I got to thinking, like, when was the last time we saw Brian have a random hookup? I don't remember. It became like such a non-thing in the show.
Well, I think that needs to speak to the growth of the characters. Not saying that they aren't going to have explicit trysts in this rest of the seasons, but I think like a lot of queer folk, as they grow up, they find that they want to either settle down. We now have a better option, or the ability for us to have a family is more probable. We're able to be a little more open with that. I think that's what the show wants to try and do, and show that maybe to be a disservice, show us that we can be more palatable to a more mainstream audience.
Yeah, definitely. I just found the stories were less and less about gay men partying, which is why I really like the show.
I think it was also speaking to the activism that was happening.
True.
You know, this
very
is true. 2004, 2005, 3 years into that, 3 years after that, we have Obama's election, but also we need to think about Proposition 8 that's going to follow. And we start to see that marriage equality and equal rights are becoming more to the forefront.
Sure.
So I think there's a lot to say for that. And I like that the show was trying to get in while it could and have its say. Because, I mean, this is a queer show that at the time was able to be more daring than, say, something like Will and Grace. Because this was on Showtime, whereas Will and Grace was on network television, and the gays were just sort of played for laughs.
This upcoming season is kind of more about family, Hunter adopting the 17-year-old. Like, we'll Melanie and Michael have a baby. Yeah. Michael and Melanie have a baby. There's health issues, like Brian and his balls come into play. Ted's addiction is still going. There's some bad news for Vic. Career-wise, Brian starts building a business. Ted's still struggling to find his new career. Oh, wait, he's an accountant. He knows how to do that. Surprise. Rage becomes a movie full of activism.
Remember how they create a comic called Rage, and after one issue, it was the talk of the town?
That's right. Justin forms the Pink Posse, and Lindsay steps out into some unfamiliar territory, and that's a story arc that's very divisive in the community, come to find out. That's where Lindsay has this affair with a man.
Mm-hmm. I understand that because I feel there's a sort of stereotype that women can turn their sexuality on and off very easily, whereas for gay men, as soon as they have sex with women, they're gay.
The thing that got a lot of attention here is that Lindsay, after having that affair, tells Melanie about it. Oh, Melanie finds out. And then Melanie basically comes out and says, "You're wrong to do that. You are a lesbian. I hate you because you're not being a lesbian anymore." So Melanie wasn't giving her a whole lot of flexibility in that.
Would she have been more or less upset if she had had an affair with another woman?
Well, she was in the past.
Right.
It was just interesting because in 2019, as we're recording this, a lot of people are saying there were no bisexual characters in the show. And the one opportunity where there was a bisexual event was downplayed as, that's bad.
Exactly. Yes. And I think that, especially now when if you've never watched The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, there is a pansexual character, which I think is really exciting.
Oh yeah. You sent me that scene. It's like, ooh.
Yes.
The final thing of season four is Emmett learns about American football. I don't know if you remember that storyline.
And Drew.
Drew Boyd.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to that one. That was one of my favorite scenes.
I look forward to all the punting that's about to happen.
And the tight ends.
And wide receivers.
Oh boy, can we get any more cliche today?
I mean, we are drinking white wine while we talk about a gay show.
Well, that's true. And it did come out of a box. So anyway, there's a Bravo reboot of Queer as Folk coming up.
Yes, a couple of weeks ago it was announced by Bravo that they are going to reboot the series. However, this is a reboot that comes off of the original UK series.
It's not a direct sequel of the US version, and by all accounts, it's not a direct sequel of the UK version, but it is like inspired by. So I'm very okay with that because I firmly believe that television and movie characters work best when they are kind of frozen in time. I think it's a true rarity when characters are successfully revisited after so much time has passed. Without the original creative team, the characters just come out so different and they just kind of no longer make sense. The only exception to that I could think of was how J.J. Abrams rebooted Star Trek, but he's like one of the top creatives in the world. He knows how to pull this off.
Yes, he knew how.
Bravo, I don't think, does.
No. J.J. Abrams knew how to satisfy the hardcore fans while putting his spin on it, while bringing the series forward. And I think that's the real key to it. We see so many reboots or revivals nowadays, from One Day at a Time on Netflix to Murphy Brown coming back to Will and Grace reappearing.
Cagney and Lacey starring Sharon Glass originally.
Like the fact that Will and Grace is a show that got rebooted and asked, everything you saw in that last episode didn't happen. It was a dream. And
is that show still going?
Yeah,
the rebooted one?
Yes, it is.
I never watched the original, so.
I always enjoyed the original, and that was before I was out. And
when you had a girlfriend.
That said, she did introduce me to this show, so had she not done that, I wouldn't be here today.
That button's going to get me into trouble.
Yes, it is. I'm about to take it. Yes, and listeners, we do have brand new recording equipment.
We're in a new studio today.
So Patrick is like a kid in a candy store right now. I'm going to get one of those buttons and he doesn't even know when.
That's right. I'm even a little bit nervous about the upcoming Downton Abbey movie.
I will say, when I went to see The Favorite, I saw a trailer to it, and I on a big screen. I mean, I watched it on like on my computer and on my phone.
Was it that non-plot driven
the
trailer?
Teaser?
Yeah,
it was fabulous.
It didn't give away anything. No. But Julian Fellowes is writing that, so it's not like Cohn and Lippman are coming back to write a preachy Queer as Folk. This is just something entirely different.
It sounds like they're taking the brand.
Yeah, exactly.
And trying to spin out to something new. At that point, I'm like, why not just create a new queer show?
The creative team of the reboot so far has nobody from the U.S. version of the show. Russell T. Davies wrote the U.K. version. He's the executive producer of the reboot. Nicola Schindler produced the U.K. version. She's executive producing the reboot. Stephen Dunn is writing and executive producing the reboot. And I know nothing about him. And his IMDb credits are kind of, So
sparse or just odd?
Typical gay stuff. Sort of like how Tom Daly's boyfriend wrote and directed The Journey of Jared Price, which is just a terrible gay movie.
When you say Tom Daly's boyfriend, are you talking about the Academy Award winner, Dustin Lance Black?
Yes.
Okay. The one who wrote Milk. Okay.
Yeah. But before that, he wrote The Journey of Jared Price, which was abysmal, terrible movie.
Is it about a gay Mormon?
No.
Oh.
Well, maybe he is a Mormon. I don't know.
Which, I mean, that is Dustin Lance Black's like life.
So I'm not entirely sure what the show's going to be, but Variety magazine, which is kind of the Bible of Hollywood, says, quote, "It's described as a modern take on the original British series that centers on a group of club-going friends who finds support in the gay community following a tragedy." So I can get behind that. I love British television. None of my friends have a BritBox subscription except for me. So,
well, and it's very interesting. When we posted that news on our social media, a lot of our listeners and a lot of our fans had strong opinions about the UK version.
Yeah, this just makes me hopeful that Bravo is not going to turn it into like the Real Housewives of the gay bar.
I think that's exactly what they're going to do to it.
Yeah, my take is that this is going to be Queer as Folk in name only. And if that's the case, why even bother with the name? Because it will probably be targeting an audience different from those who watch Queer as Folk UK or US originally. So the marketing value of that name isn't that great for the target audience that they're surely going to go for.
Yeah, at that point, just do something new. Do your own thing. I don't know what kind of rate of return they're going to expect on just using Queer as Folk.
Yeah.
TM,
you know? I get it. The cast is probably going to be young, ridiculously good looking. It'll be set in the summertime on a beach so that they can get lots of skin.
I am already annoyed with this.
That's never what Queer as Folk was about.
No, it was always cold and harsh.
Yeah. The show's on Bravo, so surely it can't be even nearly as risque as either the UK or the US editions of the show have been.
If you've never watched their first scripted series, which is called Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, I have. And it has done some risque moments. There's a lot of raunchier sex scenes. Now, nowhere near to the extent of this, because it is still Bravo. But, you know, you see a lot of humping that happens.
Well, humping is one thing, but
now you know what rimming is.
I don't think we're going to hear those words on Bravo, right? So we'll see what comes out. I don't doubt for a minute that we'll do a podcast about it.
There will be a follow-up, I'm sure.
So we'll see how it goes. So thanks for listening to our season 3 recap episode. And if you listen to any of our other episodes, thank you so much. We've enjoyed being part of your life for a few minutes.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks to kick off season 4. And we're really looking forward to spending more time with you.
In the season 4 premiere, after spending all of his money getting Stockwell defeated, Brian is at a crossroads about his future.
And Michael and Hunter return home to face the custody hearing.
That will be episode 1 of season 4.
In the meantime, we're on Twitter and Instagram at StillQueerAF, and you can find us on Facebook at StillQueerAsFolk.
I'm on Instagram at Patrick Randall and would love to connect to all of you.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at MatthewPD, and that's with 2 T's.
Until next time, I'm Patrick Randall.
And I'm Matt Dominguez.
Still Queer as Folk was produced by me, Patrick Randall, for Slightly Unbalanced. Matt Dominguez wrote and performed the show with me. Still Queer as Folk is made with love in Chicago.
Still Queer as Folk.